Our fifth case for this morning is United States against Guy Tan, 09-3601. And we'll hear first from you, Mr. Nelson.
May it please the Court. Jacob Nelson on behalf of Appellant Kenneth Gayton. Due to the time constraints, I will focus my remarks primarily on two issues raised in the appellant's brief. First, the Confrontation Clause issue, and second, the impermissible dual testimony offered by Special Agent Michael Moreland. With respect, of course, if the Court has questions on any other points, I'll, of course, be glad to answer those. Under the U.S. Supreme Court precedent of Crawford v. Washington, in order to admit testimonial hearsay, the Confrontation Clause of the U.S. Constitution requires, one, that the witness be unavailable, and second, that the defendant have the opportunity for prior cross-examination of that witness. I believe the government would admit that neither of these predicates were satisfied in this case, which means the government has to argue that these statements were offered only for context. In other words,
they could be testimonial, but they're not necessarily hearsay.
Precisely, yes. And in the event that the court were to adopt the position that the excerpted statements were not hearsay, then Crawford is not implicated. However, this court has recognized in United States versus Nettles that the government's characterization of whether or not a statement is offered for context or offered for the truth of the matter asserted is not dispositive, that the court needs to make an independent analysis whether what is the purpose for that the government is trying to introduce this evidence for.
But don't we also have to take into account the guidance that the district court judge gives to the jury? And in this instance, the district court judge, I believe, on two separate occasions tells the jury, you know, you should listen to this testimony purely for context. It's only, you know, a lot of the responses don't mean a thing in isolation. You have to know what's being said by the other half of the conversation. So it strikes me anyway that the existence of those instructions is part of our mix.
Absolutely, and that's a very fair point. That certainly, whenever there's a curative instruction that's given, that needs to be taken seriously.
But the limiting instruction,
Thank you. But that the existence of that instruction doesn't mean that the district court needs to exercise its capacity to say, well, even though this might be offered for the truth of the matter asserted, does the limiting instruction cure that? That is, should the only relevant excerpts that should be allowed to be played for the jury be the excerpts that are pure context, which would then, under those circumstances, the instruction would be perfectly appropriate. However, that doesn't give the government carte blanche to introduce evidence that is offered for the truth of the matter asserted and then claim the instruction would eliminate error. Even though we do assume that the jury listens to the instructions that they're given, they may not be able to make that distinction subtly, or it might be more of a subconscious decision that could, you know, infect the jury, that would make them, you know, take these issues into account impermissibly.
But a lot of these statements can be understood a couple ways. So as I understand it, one of them that you're complaining about is where the confidential informant says, my brother just came with some dude who's trying to get 2 ounces of rock, right?
That's correct.
So why is that something that's being offered for the truth of the fact that crack is being dealt with?
Because that statement taken in conjunction with the second statement, if you recall within the transcript, once that first statement about the brother trying to get crack, Mr. Gayton responded, what you need? And then later on, he just says, I am trying to get 2 ounces of rock. And that statement.
Bows of rock.
Exactly, bows of rock, yes, thank you. Yes. And when that statement is made, it's very clear that the truth of the matter is that Mr. Worthen, the confidential informant, was actually trying to obtain that crack cocaine. And the government was trying to make that inference that because Mr. Worthen wanted to buy crack cocaine, Mr. Gayton must have wanted to sell crack cocaine. And once mutual drug talk occurs later in the conversations, the defendant will freely admit that that testimony provides context. When Mr. Gayton offers price terms and then Mr. Worthen responds to those price terms, his responses clearly do provide a fair context to those statements. However, the first statements of that transcript, which is the first thing the jury heard when they played that first videotape, is simply Mr. Worthen engaging in a rambling statement talking about his desire to purchase crack cocaine. And the government shouldn't have been able to play those portions of the tape, and rather should have began later when there was clearly consensual mutual drug talk that was
occurring. But Mr. Gayton says, what you need. And, I mean, you can't just play that part. It doesn't.
Yeah, well, fair. But the what you need, though, I think it's important that Mr. Worthen says, I'm looking to get 2 ounces of crack cocaine. So Mr. Worthen is expressly clear as to what he needs, at which point Mr. Gayton's response what you need seems to say, I don't understand what you're saying. I'm confused by the statements that you're making. What you need doesn't provide context to what has already been clearly said by Mr. Worthen. It isn't until later where they talk about where the loot and then those types of expressions where you get to there's a clear understanding that Mr. Worthen and Mr. Gayton are talking about the same thing. I think, looking at the transcript fairly, I think Mr. Gayton just doesn't know what Mr. Worthen is talking about at that point in the conversation, or at least that would be the defendant's characterization as such. Because the government impermissibly focused this case on trying to prove Worthen's intent, these statements, I think, invited the jury to make some impermissible conclusions that because Mr. Worthen wanted to buy drugs, Mr. Gayton must have wanted to sell drugs, which is really the ultimate issue the government was responsible for proving. With respect to the second issue, I would like to eliminate any confusion that may have occurred in the appellant's reply brief. Agent Moreland was the case agent, that is the government's primary fact witness for the April 19 transaction, and Lieutenant Coleman was the government's designated drug code expert. Gayton would now concede that Lieutenant Coleman was properly admitted as an expert under Federal Rule of Evidence 702 and gave permissible expert testimony on the meaning of several drug code words. Even under the fairly exacting and demanding standard of plain error review, Mr. Gayton believes that reversal and remanding is still appropriate in this instance.
With respect to Moreland, then?
Yes, precisely. And that's exactly. We are challenging the drug code testimony given by Special Agent Moreland, who was never certified under FRE 702, but rather was testifying as the as a lay witness, a fact witness, as the case agent for the April 19 transaction.
Why is that harmful, though? I mean, why is there something reversible if he says two big ones means 2 ounces?
Your Honor, respectfully, I believe that, at least from my review of the record, honestly, I think the most persuasive piece of evidence the government ever introduced at trial was the statement that Gayton admitted to engaging in that transaction occurring back on March 8th, and that the only way that the jury would be able to understand that Gayton made that admission was when Gayton was asked, when Worthen asked Gayton, so, remember when I got those two big ones from you? Gayton said yes, because the government concedes that this is drug code testimony that would not be comprehensible to a jury without expert testimony, then you needed to have a definition that two big ones meant 2 ounces. And if the jury didn't have that definition, they wouldn't know that Gayton was actually admitting to the drug transaction that occurred back on March 8th. And as such...
I'll tell you, it's a sorry comment about sitting on this court, but... when I saw two big ones, I assumed it meant 2 ounces of crack cocaine.
Well, that's fair. But I believe.
But I understand your point. It's drug code. So.
Yes. I mean, and I think that's consistent with cases like United States versus York that came before this court when they're just talking about numeric statements, you know, 5 and 55, or as the special, or as Lieutenant Coleman actually testified in this case, you know, what does an 8-ball mean? 8-ball means, you know, 1/8 of an ounce. Or, you know, what does O mean? O means ounce. These were statements that Judge Pallmeyer correctly, in our view, allowed to be introduced as testimony.
Did he really testify to a translation? I mean, did he translate what that meant, or did he just discuss the context of the conversation?
Well, I mean, I believe the relevant provision asks, the prosecutor asks, so how did you know that the deal was on for the next day for 2 ounces of crack cocaine? So the question defines what eventually the basis for knowledge that Special Agent Moreland would testify to. And Special Agent Moreland said, because the source initially asked for, quote, two big ones, unquote, and referred to a previous drug purchase on March 8th, 2006.
Okay,
and
so, this implicitly that's translation testimony, even though he wasn't asked like an expert witness.
Precisely, yes, Judge. That's precisely the point that we're making, that he was making a translation of something that was within the realm of expert testimony that was not within the realm of testimony that a lay witness should be able to testify to. And if you know, if they wanted to make those kind of expert testimony, then qualification under Federal Rule of Evidence 702 was in order. Curative instruction would have been in order. These things did not occur. I see that my time is now...
Save a few seconds. I will let you do that.
Thanks so much.
Thank you. Ms. Marin.
May it please the Court, my name is Maureen Marin, and I represent the United States. The District Court did not err in admitting the testimony from Special Agent Moreland, just to begin where counsel let off. this particular testimony had to do with a call made on April 18, 2006, the day before the second controlled purchase from the defendant by the CW. And as you pointed out, Judge Wood, the agent did not expressly define the term two big ones, but simply stated his inference as to what it meant based on his experience in the March 8, 2006 transaction.
Aren't you being a little picky, though, because it sure does sound like it's a translation. Two big ones, you know, could mean anything. It could mean two sacks of flour. In fact, it means 2 ounces of crack. It's quite a bit of crack, by the way.
It is, Your Honor, and that is the inference that Special Agent Moreland made to the jury. I simply bring that up to say that it wasn't presented in the context of expert testimony. What does this mean in your experience, agent? But simply asked of the agent, you know, based on what you knew from the events of the investigation, what did you think was going to happen next? And this resulting testimony from Agent Moreland was based on his understanding of what happened during the March 8, 2006 deal, which a few pages prior he had testified about his involvement in the March 8 deal. He knew what had happened there. He knew, as the jury knew, what was recovered there, which was 2 ounces of crack cocaine. And he basically made the inference and explained that to the jury. This is what he thought two big ones meant. And in that context, his testimony is not expert testimony, but rather lay testimony offered by a witness and based on his experience in the investigation. Furthermore, the government never relied on Agent Moreland's definition of two big ones. They didn't rely on it in argument, and they didn't rely on it in closing. They simply argued to the jury that the jury could make that same inference, that based on what happened on March 8, 2006 in the first deal, where they did recover 2 ounces of crack cocaine from the defendant, and that deal was the deal that the CW told the defendant, hey, me and my brother are going to come and we want 2 ounces, that the jury could make that same inference that when the CW referred back to that conversation, hey, remember when my brother was there and we got the two big ones, that the defendant was, in fact, essentially admitting his involvement in the deal.
So of course, there was independent evidence that the March 8th transaction did result in the recovery of the 2 ounces.
Absolutely. Certainly, the only evidence of the March 8th deal was not simply defendants' statements regarding it in the April 18th transaction, but rather the entire controlled buy on March 8th, 2006 that was surveilled and recorded. And the jury heard all of that evidence, including listening to the defendant and the CW negotiate the March 8th transaction and seeing for themselves the crack cocaine that was recovered. They saw the photographs of the two different rocks of crack cocaine, and they heard the testimony of what it had tested out to be.
So what about the Confrontation Clause issue? I mean, it seems like this skirts right up to the edge when the cooperating person refers to the 2 ounces of rock, and then he refers again a couple O's of rock. Why did that have to come in? I mean, it just seems to me that it's just right up at the edge of actually testifying that that's what Mr. Gaitan is up to, in which case there's a Confrontation Clause problem. It slips over the line from context to direct testimony.
In this case, Your Honor, those statements needed to come in order to make the defendant's statements understandable to the jury. The first question, looking at the March 8, 2006 transcript, the CW arrives with sort of a convoluted story. My brother came with its dude who wants 2 ounces of rock. I'm trying. And the defendant responds, what you need. And then the CW makes his question to the defendant more clear. I'm trying to get 2 ounces of rock. And the defendant's response is what matters here and what is not understandable without understanding what the question is. The defendant's response to I'm trying to get 2 ounces of crack is, where's the loot at? Which indicates the defendant's understanding of exactly what it is that the CW wants and the defendant's willingness to provide that if only he had the money. And that becomes even more clear when you look at the next immediately following exchange between the defendant and the CW, where the CW says, well, how much do I need for each ounce? And the defendant says, I'll give it to you. I'll give it to you for 6 bills. And that further requires that you understand what it was that the CW was requesting in the first place to understand what it is that the defendant is going to give back to him in the second place. It's significant, as the government argued to the jury, that he didn't say, I'll give you the cigarettes or I'll give you the marijuana or I'll give you anything else for $6. What the defendant, what the question was necessary so that the jury could understand what exactly it was that the defendant was responding. And again, as in this case, the defendant, the government never argued that the jury should credit what the CW said for the evidence that crack cocaine was distributed, but instead to look directly at what the defendant said. The defendant himself described the substance as rock. Only a page later in the transcripts, minutes later, the defendant discussed with the CW, hey, if you'd come earlier, I would have given you a ball, which the jury learned was a common slang for crack cocaine. There's no confusion here over whether or not the defendant distributed crack. And again, as I mentioned earlier, at the end of that deal, there was 2 ounces of what was tested and found to be crack cocaine. I'd just like to distinguish this briefly, this situation where the statements are introduced, the statements of a non-testifying witness are introduced to give context to the defendant's admissions from some of the cases cited in defense's brief concerning when statements of non-testifying witnesses are introduced to provide context for the investigation. That's certainly not what happened here. The individual on these recordings was the defendant, and his statements were absolutely, the CW statements were introduced to provide context directly to those admissions. For these reasons and the reasons stated in our brief, the United States asks that you affirm the conviction and sentence of Kenneth Gayton.
All right, thank you. I think you have about a minute left, Mr. Nelson, so we'll give you a full minute.
Your Honors, I'd like to make a couple quick points. First, the inference of two big ones that was asked in the question at trial to Special Agent Coleman, this inference was made as expert testimony, even if it wasn't expressly packaged as such. Like in the case of the circuit, United States versus Oredo, where the question was, how is crack cocaine packaged? Even though the government's witness tried to say, well, this was based on my personal observations on how this is packaged, the court properly concluded that this was, in fact, expert testimony. That is, the basis for that agent's knowledge was prior drug investigations was how he knew crack cocaine would be packaged. Similarly, in this case, the government's question was, how do you know there were 2 ounces of crack cocaine? And the only response Special Agent Moreland gave was because the CI talked about two big ones. And as such, this clearly has to be an inference that it was expert testimony. The fact that the government claims that it was not relied upon in the closing statement, I believe, is slightly inaccurate because the government states, the source says, do you remember when I came over there with my brother and them and I got those two big ones from you? Defendant says, yeah, he's talking about the March deal. As such, the only way a definition of two big ones would have occurred is through that testimony from Special Agent Moreland. I see my time has expired. Thank you.
All right. Well, thank you. And you were appointed, were you not?
That is correct.
We appreciate your help to your client and to the court. Thanks as well to the government.
Thanks so much, Your Honor.